Welcome to today's edition of the Rush 24/7 podcast.
Well, another day, another Republican turncoat. We have more so-called conservatives and Republicans abandoning the cause, seeking approval from the left. It just seems to be an endless tide. Greetings, my friends. Rush Limbaugh, the EIB Network, and the Limbaugh Institute for Advanced Conservative Studies. Great to be with you. The phone number, if you want to join us today, 800-282-2882. The email address, lrushbaugh@eibnet.com. The oil price continues to fall today. It's 129 yesterday. It's 127, 128 in some places today. I've been monitoring it for you. Totally unexpected. There's now panic in some drive-by media reporting over this, that the price is falling. It's panic from the standpoint of the oil companies and the oil business. Oh, no, the prices are falling. At any rate, ladies and gentlemen, Scott McClellan, with a big tell-all book, a guy that never voiced one complaint, never resigned in protest, never told anybody how he felt. What you have here is many things, but among them, a classic illustration of what I always say, of how Republicans slash conservatives end up going to Washington, and the Washington political and social culture just swallows them up. They'll throw anybody under the bus, even their own grandmothers, to have a seat of power with the libs, get their approval. Not just Scott McClellan, he's the worst example of it lately, but we've got, you know, a bunch of quasi-pseudo-conservative journalists, and I'm going to talk about this at length today, who are writing pieces all over the place now, all over the web, about how we ought to... Well, there's one example. Alex Castellanos, who a Republican strategist, is all over CNN these days and MSNBC, I think. He's a Republican strategist. He had a piece at National Review Online yesterday about how, look, we Republicans have got to understand something. We have to understand the American people love government. They love the function. So we've got to redefine it and continue to use the term. I'm paraphrasing. And he says, government is at the end of your driveway. Government is in your house. Government is in your church. The way we govern ourselves. But we can do it better than having the government in Washington do it. But it's still adopting the terminology of the left. And the terminology of the left is very, very important. It's persuasive. It is... It's propagandized. It's just another example of how we're supposed to accept the premise of the left. We'll get into that in a little greater detail as the program unfolds. Karl Rove last night was on the Fox News channel, Hannity and Combs, and was asked specifically about the McClellan book. We have the first of two sound bites here.
He says that following a meeting Scooter and I visited in 2005, well, Scooter and I visited all the time. I don't really know what the particular meeting in question was about. I know what it wasn't about, which was it was not about Plainman Wilson. He was the vice president's chief of staff, and as a result, we had a lot of business. And I think it's frankly maybe a sign of irresponsibility for Scott to sort of suggest that because he saw the two of us meet and he didn't happen to be in the meeting, he somehow knows what the meeting was about.
What about the specific charge that he is claiming that you misled him about your level of involvement in the Valerie Plame case?
That's simply not true.
Hannity then piped up and said, if he really felt this way, why didn't he leave earlier?
This doesn't sound like Scott. It really doesn't. Not the Scott McClellan I've known for a long time. Second of all, it sounds like somebody else. It sounds like a left-wing blogger. Second of all, you're right. If he had these moral qualms, he should have spoken up about them. And frankly, I don't remember him speaking up about these things. I don't remember a single word. There were people on the White House staff, colleagues of mine, who had doubts about this or that policy. They spoke out. But this doesn't sound like Scott, frankly.
Sounds like a liberal blogger. It really does. Somebody got hold of him, and I've never met him. I don't know Scott McClellan. I just know him from his work, which I never thought was anything spectacular. I thought the guy was a little wussy in front of the press. And I remember back when he was the press secretary, you know, a lot of us sitting here, why don't these guys fight back? The liberals and the Democrats are out trying to destroy this administration. Why don't they fight back? Why don't they just reject some of the premises? And the idea that McClellan writes the press wasn't hard enough on Bush. I mean, this is absurd. All of this is just absurd. Francis Frego Townsend, who was the Homeland Security advisor, now a CNN commentator, was on CNN. Anderson Cooper 180 last night, and he asked her this. What's your reaction to the Scott McClellan book?
People need to understand that as an advisor to the president, I or Scott have an obligation, a responsibility to voice concerns on policy issues. Scott never did that on any of these issues, as best I can remember, and as best I know from my White House colleagues.
Never spoke out.
No, and so for him to do this now, frankly, strikes me as self-serving, disingenuous, and unprofessional.
Pretty good way to summarize this. McClellan also says that he was very upset that the president never really governed. He was just in a permanent campaign. Now, excuse me, but it was the Clintons who exercised the Oval Office as a campaign war room for 8 years. The Clinton campaign constantly was in campaign mode, re-election mode. To say this about George W. Bush, man, if this White House was in a constant campaign mode, they were pretty bad at it. They were pretty damn bad at it. There was campaign mode means you're out there trying to persuade people. There was none of that. There was no fighting the left. There were no fighting the Dems. There were no ideological battles. I chronicled here how they had a policy of not doing that because they didn't want to be confrontational and they didn't want to be contentious. They were trying to, you know, put together this new tone business where they were working with Democrats. I mean, hell's bells. Here's Ted Kennedy writing the education bill. What was that? No Child Behind, Left Alone, or whatever it is. Have you seen this UN story? I mean, that's literally what this is. No Child Behind, Left Alone. UN peacekeepers, international aid workers from 23 organizations have engaged in sexual exploitation of children, including some as young as six, in Haiti, the Ivory Coast, and South Sudan, according to a report by Save the Children, a British-based aid legacy. 28-page report based on interviews with 250 children ages 10 to 17 concluded it's impossible to know the extent of the problem since few victims report abuse and few UN agencies or private charities compile data. UN peacekeepers have been identified as a particular source of abuse, especially in Haiti and Ivory Coast, according to this report. Those cases follow a spate of reports on sexual abuse by UN peacekeepers and aid workers stretching back to Cambodia in the early 1990s. So what, that's it? Will you get a report? Well, I know Ban Ki-moon's going to look into it. Whoopee-doo. Meanwhile, these clowns send somebody from the United Nations to this country to inspect racism because of what's happening to Obama. Screw these people. They're out there abusing kids, these little blue helmet kids, and we know this is not new. They've been doing this for a long time. This is the left's Abu Ghraib. Literally, Abu Ghraib. This is far worse than what went on in Abu Ghraib. This is children. Where's the trial? Where's the investigation? No. We get a report. We get a report. And we're supposed to bend over forward and grab the ankles for this bunch and say this bunch cares about the world. We're supposed to do what? It's just maddening. Maybe Scott McClellan go work for this bunch. Maybe he can get to the bottom of it. Scott McClellan knows so damn much about what went on in places, and he really had the honor and the integrity to stand up and say, no mas, I'm leaving. I can't stand to work in such a dishonorable place, Mr. President. I'm getting out. The truth is he was fired, and that's why he's mad about this. He was replaced by Tony Snow because he was not that good. David Gregory gets close to it. MSNBC Live, DNC TV this morning, anchor Tamron Hall, talking to Stretch Gregory, she says, hey, a lot of people wondering how much of this book is about payback, excuse me, and that Scott McClellan believes that he was put out there and encouraged to repeat a lie. You mentioned credibility, but the other word of payback has been coming up this morning.
He was very angry about this leak episode. So clearly angry about his credibility being hurt. And I think that's clearly part of what he wants to set straight in this book, what the backstory was for all of that. There appears to me to be a kind of disillusion with the White House and with this president that tended to build over time within the White House. But I just have to say that in all the time that I covered McClellan, going back to the 2000 campaign, never did he leave the impression that he felt this way at the time, not privately, not publicly, which is why I think this book surprises so many.
What is this? I wouldn't be surprised if some liberal editor or publisher at whatever company published this book got hold of this guy. This is, Rove is right. This is exactly the kind of stuff that you read on the blogs. And I've gone and checked out the Democrat blogs today. You know what? They're not particularly worked up about it because this is not news to us. We've known this since 2000. We don't care about this. So you guys are just figuring this out. We've known this all along. Blah, 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 blah. Very angry about the leak episode. That's one of the things that that has been excerpted, I guess, or that he's talked about. The Valerie Plame leak episode. He claims that Rove and Libby lied to him. He claims that he saw Rove and Libby go into a meeting by themselves. And he never knew what was in that meeting. He never knew what was said, but he assumes that it was about the leak. The leak didn't come from the White House. The leak came from Richard Armitage. I mean, here we have one of the most egregious, outrageous abuses of the legal system, this whole trial, based on finding out who leaked the name of Valerie Plame when it was already known by the prosecutor before he started the trial. It was Richard Armitage. Libby gets convicted and so forth, and McClellan's out there going, they let me out the line. They knew what was going. Now, Bush didn't know. Bush was also fooled by this. So he's his precious credibility. It was got forced a lot. I just, my memory, folks, is that McClellan, you know, was a little doughboy standing up there in the press room. Ha, welcome back. Rush Limbaugh, America's real anchorman, America's truth detector, and doctor of democracy. Great to have you with us. Telephone number is 800-282-2882. The Barack Obama gaffe machine rolls on. At some point, ladies and gentlemen, and the drive-by media is out there saying, you know, we got to cut both these people, all three of these people, some slack. I mean, it's a long campaign out there. There are going to be misstatements, as many words as these people speak. Why, they can't possibly be expected to get everything right all the time. There are going to be slip-ups. Note that is not something they extend to people like me who host radio talk shows. If they think we have made a mistake, it is front page news and so forth. They just go on and on and on about it, never taking into account that we speak more in a week here than Obama does. Try 15 hours. So he's a walking gaffe machine out there, and they say, yeah, you got to cut these people some slack. No, no, no. At some point, doesn't it make sense that somebody running for president should know some things, should have a basic understanding of American history? I realize, based on some email that I received yesterday, that some of you people thought I was a little too harsh when discussing Obama's relative ignorance about Memorial Day and other things. They just keep piling up. What this guy has, and this is a psychological problem, and somebody has written about it on a blog. Let me see, where was this written about? Because it is exactly right. RedState.com, our old buddy Eric Erickson and his team, a pathological need to be part of history. And it's true, almost half of these gaffes that Obama makes involve a family member being involved in it somehow. All these, like Selma and his father getting over to the country because of the Kennedys. And now some relative raiding, what was it, Auschwitz? Buka, well, no, but it was wherever he said it was. He got it wrong. It went to the different places. But there is this need, and as Byron York points out, and I think this is an interesting observation, too. Have you noticed, Byron York says, that the only family members that Barack talks about are the white side of his family? His mother, his grandmother. We never hear about all the great heroes on his father's side of the family. His father, one little, I think, reference to his father being so moved by the Kennedys, or so moved by something, that he came over here and found his mom and married her. But that turns out to be an exaggeration. This is Monday, Memorial Day. This is shortly after Obama just saw the dead. He's giving his Memorial Day speech. Fallen line, a broken line, a breaking line of fallen heroes, some of whom I see here today. Some of whom I see here today. He also said this.
I had a uncle who was part of the first American troops to go into Auschwitz and liberate the concentration camps. And the story in our family was is that when he came home, he just went up into the attic, and he didn't leave the house for 6 months.
Oh, yeah, this is part of the post-traumatic stress order. This is his motivating, inspiring, and uplifting Memorial Day speech. Supposed to be a speech honoring the dead who have served this country. Instead, he tries to portray them all as a bunch of psychological nutcases. Anyway, this he got it wrong. The Red Army, by the way, the Russians, who at the time were our allies, because they hated the Nazis. They despised them. This, you remember, George Patton radioed back to headquarters, said, Ike, Omar, let me head into Moscow and take care of these people now. We're going to have hell to pay if we don't. They wouldn't let him go. And he turned out to be right. But he wanted, after he finished off what he was doing in World War II with the Nazis, he wanted to head right over to Moscow and finish these guys off. And they said no. But it was the Red Army that liberated Auschwitz, and of course Obama's uncle could not. Well, maybe, well, who the hell knows? But anyway, he gets home in 6 months up in the attic because he was so distressed. Last night, Lou Dobbs Tonight had this exchange with correspondent Candy Crowley.
Do you think somebody should create a petition to perhaps make certain that all of these candidates get enough sleep? Do you think that'd be a good idea?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, when I talked to the campaign today, Auschwitz, Buchenwald, obviously these are two very famous concentration camps, and they said he simply misspoke. But as you mentioned, between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, we have had a lot of sleep-deprived statements lately.
Brent Bozell has a great piece on this. Let me read to you the open of his column. Imagine that John McCain named a young running mate to campaign with him. And his national rookie suggested America had 58 states, repeatedly used the wrong names for the cities he was visiting, and honored a Memorial Day crowd by acknowledging the fallen heroes who were present, somehow alive and standing in the audience. How long would it take for the national media to see another Dan Quayle caricature? Let's raise the stakes. What if it was a GOP presidential candidate making these thoroughly ridiculous comments? This scenario is very real, except it isn't McCain. It's the other guy, Barack Obama. ABC reporter Jake Tapper follows politicians around for a living. On his blog, he suggested Barack Obama has a problem. The man's been a one-man gaffe machine. Just the last few days, Sunrise, Florida. Obama said, "How's it going, sunshine?" He did the same thing in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, calling it Sioux City. Some of his geographic struggles seem calculated. When asked why Hillary Clinton trounced him in Kentucky, Obama said, "I'm not very well known in that part of the country. Senator Clinton, I think, much better known coming from a nearby state of Arkansas, so it's not surprising she would have an advantage some of those states in the middle." The problem is that Obama's home state of Illinois is more than near Kentucky. It borders Kentucky. Arkansas does not. In Oregon. Obama said of his long campaign, "I've been in 57 states, I think, one left to go." Nobody in the press made much of this. Mark Ambinder, former ABC political reporter, now with the Atlantic Monthly, admitted, "Yeah, if John McCain did this, if he mistakenly said he visited 57 states, the media would be all up in his grill accusing him of a senior moment." If you doubt him, remember how most media outlets noted, then underlined McCain's error about al-Qaeda being trained and funded by Iran. And it goes on and on to the, you know, we get to the point here about the invasion of the concentration camp. Obama talked about the post-traumatic stress disorder by claiming he had an uncle who was part of the American Brigade that helped liberate Auschwitz and came home and spent 6 months in the attic. The prisoners at Auschwitz were liberated, as I said, by the Red Army. Obama earlier made the claim on his campaign site that his grandfather knew American troops who liberated Auschwitz, and Treblinka, also liberated by the Red Army. So he's done this twice. It does get to the point here where we need to, this guy's got a fundamental psychological need to be part of history. I mean, the Selma example is a good one, too. Don't we think these guys running for president ought to know something about their own country? Yes, we are back. serving humanity simply by showing up. There's another theory going around about Scott McClellan, and it is this. This is by Lee Carey from The American Thinker. Scott McClellan's book making big waves in the last election for Texas governor, the Republican Texas controller, Carol Keaton Strayhorn, who used the slogan One Tough Grandma, based on her cost-saving reputation as controller, ran as an independent Republican, a la like a Joe Lieberman, against the incumbent governor, Rick Perry. Rick Perry was Bush's lieutenant governor, and he became governor when Bush moved to Washington. Carol Keaton Strayhorn started her campaign with a flurry, faded fast, and got trounced in the election, receiving virtually no support from the GOP. Scott McClellan is Carol Keaton Strayhorn's son. And Mr. Carey here believes that there is payback, that the book is payback from the family for McClellan's mom being ignored in her campaign for governor of the state of Texas. Let's grab a couple phone calls on this before we open up other interesting areas. We'll start with Darla in Bellingham, Washington. Hi, Darla. Nice to have you here.
Hi, Rush. I tell you, I can hardly talk. I am so upset about this Scott McClellan book. I have children and grandchildren that I have to try to protect in our great nation. And here for a buck, for payback, I don't care what it is. Can't wait till the president's out of office. We have to do things, and of course, he has more credence because he's known, quote-unquote, the president longer than many. So he comes out with this trashy crap in this book that gives the haters of this country, the terrorists of the world, if it makes our news media wonder if the president's going to comment on it while he's trying to give a speech to a graduating class, that, oh, it must be that important. Well, if they tune in and it emboldens them, and it always does embolden them, well, does it make the country safer? Where is the patriotism in this country? I can hardly stand it. We have lost our soul. Scott, you're a citizen of the country first. If it's payback to the president, fine. Is it payback to me? Is it payback to my family, too? Do you have to make the buck first? I'm sorry I sound upset, but, Rush, that's just, I don't get it. I'm fed up. Where is the patriotism in this country? Why have we decided that we don't just have to hate the president? We have to hate our country. We have to hate what it stands for. We have to put our desire for money and our 15 minutes of fame above everything.
Don't forget power, which is
power.
What this is all about.
It is, Rush. Where is our patriotism? Do you think it has to do with Scott can't write this book after President Bush is out of power because he won't make as much money?
I don't.
You think so?
No, I don't think it's that. It's possible. I don't pretend to know. I don't know this guy personally. I may have met him glancing blow, you know, walking someplace, but I don't remember meeting him. My only memory of him is watching him work, and I wasn't that impressed with his job as a press secretary. I thought he had deer in the headlight eyes all the time and was just fodder. I thought the press ate him up, chewed him up, spit him out each and every day. But look, I want to go back to what you said because, you know, what you said is so damn right on the money. And I want to try to explain it to you or answer your question in a way that it's not going to satisfy you. But I'm convinced everybody that I've heard did know Scott McClellan says they never heard him say a word like this the whole time he was in the White House. He never objected to anything about Hurricane Katrina when it was happening. He never objected to the Scooter Libby stuff. He never objected to the constant campaign. All of these complaints, all of these criticisms, nobody that worked with him claims he had that much access to know these kinds of things, and they never heard him object to any of it. And, of course, he didn't resign in a peak of honor and dignity. I think as good a guess as anybody else will have, you know, I trace everything back to liberalism because the answer to every question you asked in that great, impassioned comment that you made, the answer to every question, what's happened to our patriotism? Liberalism.
Well, I'm sick of it.
Why do we have to have hatred for the country as well as hatred for the president? Liberalism. Liberalism is the greatest threat The country as we have known it faces. And I'm convinced, I don't know who published this book, doesn't matter, but I'm convinced somebody got hold of McClellan, convinced him he could make a lot of money. Maybe he was, you know, very, very upset at being fired, which he was. And maybe there's a little payback in him, and maybe there's, okay, I'm going to get you. You did this to me. You humiliate me by firing me. Fine. So the truth of the matter is the president carried this guy out of loyalty far longer than he should. The president was not well served by this guy, and this is evidence. So I think somebody at the publishing hall somewhere, because this, have you heard all these people saying, this doesn't sound like the Scott McClellan we knew?
Then it's about money.
I don't deny that. I mean, I'm always follow the money.
Well, that's
but here's the thing. What this is, I'll tell you what it's also about, Darla. It's about the presidential campaign. You wonder why he couldn't wait till Bush is out of office? This is designed to skewer John McCain. This is designed to really give him credibility problems because now, you know, he's the guy that they're calling Bush 3. And his nickname now from the left is McSame, because they're trying as hard as they can to convince American voters that four more years of McCain is just four more years of Bush. And so,
well, we're going to wake up in this country one day, Rush, and it isn't going to be a free country anymore.
Amen.
We're on a slippery slope right now, and if the people in this country don't get their heads screwed on straight, and I would advise, I know this sounds melodramatic, and I don't care. Look into the eyes of your children and your grandchildren every day and make the conscious decision, do I want to live under tyranny? Do I want to live under the great freedoms of this nation or not?
Here's the problem, and I don't know how extensive it is, but it does have me concerned when I see Republicans caving left and right, joining Democrats, at least their ideas, and adopting their language, and it's happening all too frequently. My concern is, these people operate by polls. My concern is, what percentage of the American people doesn't see the country the way you do and I do? How many people in this country think, you know what, it's so unfair out there. The oil execs are making this, and we're at war there, and all these other people are getting rich, and I can't have health care. I need government. I need government to be my insurance policy. If people are willing to look favorably upon an ever-expanding government that they think is benevolent, then they're going to, you've heard the old saw about how easy it is to trade freedom for security.
Well, if all they have to hope for is that the government's going to take care of it, and here was a servant, Scott McClellan, that worked in the government, that couldn't complain, couldn't blow the whistle, couldn't do any of these things while he was serving in his government.
Yes, he
could have. But afterward waits to write a book.
Yes, he could have.
Then, obvious, yes, he could have, but because he didn't, if this is the great government that the people think are going to take care of them, take another look.
Well, see, that's the frustrating thing. You don't have to look at McClellan. Look at the failure of the war on poverty. Look at the failure of Medicare. Look at the failure of Medicaid. Look at the failure of AFDC. Look at the failure of the Great Society. Look at everything the liberals do fails. And they try to say, well, don't judge us on our results. Judge us on our great big hearts and our good intentions. Everything they do, they just, this global warming business, you want to talk about an encroachment on freedom. Try this. This is a story from the UK. It's in the Daily Mail. Every adult should be forced to use a carbon ration card when they pay for petrol, airline tickets, or household energy, say members of parliament. Now, we, Darla, have just had polls last week from UK citizens who are fed up with these new taxes to stop greenhouse gases and the carbon footprint. They're paying through the nose already, and they haven't noticed any improvement in the environment. And the naysayers and the scaremongers are still saying, we got to do more, we haven't done enough. They recognize what all this is. It's just a hoax to raise taxes.
Well, there are a lot of people out here like me, Rush, that quietly we talk amongst ourselves, and we know that all this bogus, trumped-up crud about the environment and the liberalism and the media shoving this down our throat. We know it. We feel it. We listen to you. We believe it. But it has to go a step further. Wake up. Citizens, wake up. You better speak up, or the time for speaking will be over, and we will have lost those rights. A carbon card to carry in your wallet? Are you kidding me?
No, listen
to this. In the greatest country of the world, the United States, we're going to follow suit? and we're going to have a bunch of special things on our driver's license or carbon this or carbon that, give me a break.
Anybody who exceeds their entitlement, their carbon entitlement, would have to buy top-up credits from individuals who haven't used up their allowance. The amount paid would be driven by market forces, the deal done through a specialist company. This is a private citizen version of McCain's cap-and-trade program that he is supporting for businesses.
Well, it's too bad. It's all too bad.
It's worse than...
Of course it's worse than that. Rush, well, all we can do is listen to your program. I've never heard you. As long as I have your ear, I will tell you, I listen every day. And I have never heard you through this presidential cycle be so spot on, so honest, not afraid to take the heat, not afraid to take the barbs. And believe me, I listen to all of it, liberal and conservative, talk show, TV, radio. We listen to it all because we feel like it is our responsibility as a United States citizen to be informed. And I have never heard you, and that's something to say because I know your rate is like 99.9. However, I have never heard you so spot on. And I can tell just in my voice, when I called, I was practically crying, and now I feel better. Now I'm just pissed.
Well,
but not weepy anymore, just angry. But I've never heard you so spot on.
You know what? I love your passion. And we're going to have the reaction to your call. I've been checking just subject lines and the emails here while we've been speaking. And people are standing up out there cheering you.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Because most people feel alone. I mean, I'm sure you look at whatever, the McClellan book incident or the latest Republican to cave and join the Democrats or whatever, and you look around and you feel, my gosh, am I isolated? Am I the only one sane in this country? And you have to have faith that they're far more than, and I think you understand this because you said so, they're far more than you that understand this.
There are tons of us out here, but they have to have a bigger voice. They have to speak louder. They have to, when they're in a group, it's like you said about when you go to a liberal thing or as opposed to a liberal coming with you, how different people feel. You have to, sometimes you're in a crowd and you get the sense that everyone, oh, I hate Bush. It's like, I'll just say nothing because I don't want to start war. It isn't about starting war. It's about that you're entitled to your opinion as much as they're entitled to theirs. There's nothing wrong with saying, sure, there are some things that the president does and says that I don't agree with, that my family doesn't agree with. Do I think that he has our best interest at heart and doing the best he can? Most of the time, yes. Am I a blind, numb robot? No. Do I know that there are problems with his candidacy? Yeah. Do I know that there has to be some great fixes in this world? Yes. But overall, I'm a United States citizen. I'm an American citizen, and I have to put my patriotism above other things. There are people that want to kill our families. There are people that want to change our way of life. And I don't want that.
Well, the liberals are trying to redefine patriotism, too.
Well,
as you know, they are trying to redefine patriotism to equal what they are doing to George W. Bush and what they are doing to the country. Their patriotism is built on the foundation that this country is a fraud, that this country is oriented toward evil, and that this country needs to be brought down to size. So, you know, I think one of the things actually that brings all this to the surface actually is our success. I think our success, the so-called conservative media, and Republicans winning elections presidential-wise when the Democrats thought they had these things sewn up, and Republicans might win the next one too. I think our success in a way is responsible for bringing these people out of their shell. They used to hide behind masks and camouflage, but now they're so enraged and they are so bitter that they are illustrating this presidential campaign on the Democrat side is a great example. They're illustrating for us exactly who they are and what they are, and you've nailed them. And don't think you're the only one out there that hasn't been able to put this together on her own. I'm glad you called, Darla. It's really great. I'm a little long here. In fact, I'm way long. I have just blown the programming format to smithereens, but that's because how good you were. We'll be back after this. Strawberry Letter 23 to Brothers Johnson. Welcome back, folks. Rush Limbaugh, the Excellence in Broadcasting Network. Here's what happened to McClellan. This is what I think happened. I don't know how. I just know that this is not new. It's not the first time. What liberals do, they search out people like McClellan so they can trash Republicans and conservatives. I mean, look at John Dean. John Dean, now a huge star on what? MSNBC? David Gergen. David Rodham Gergen used to be a fairly conservative Republican, roots back to Reagan. Now look at him. He's up there at the Kennedy School, and he's on CNN, and his purpose is to bash Republicans because they, the Republicans, they went too far right, or they went too far south, or they got too extreme or whatever, and all these reasonable, wise men decided that they could no longer be part of where the Republican Party was going. Richard Armitage, Colin Powell. This is the D.C. culture. Liberals seek these people out, and they do it with their newspapers. They try to soften up Supreme Court justices with puff pieces in the style section and so forth. These people, now they're treated like liberal elites because they've seen the light. This folks, if I may be candid, this is what so frustrated me about McCain. For all these last 6 years, McCain was trying to do the same thing. He was trying to be treated as an elite by the liberals. And how did he do it? By trashing his own party. By trashing his own president. By being more critical of his own party than he ever was our enemies. By making deals with them. He almost quit the Republican Party in 2004, whatever it was. It was he who approached John Kerry. People ask me, why do you have problems with McCain? Why do I have problems with Scott McClellan? It's not quite the same thing, but the liberals seek these people out. Now, if McCain had decided not to run for president, he would be most favored person status. He would be one of the wisest wise men on all these cable network shows, but now they got to take him out because he's jumped back. He hasn't jumped back. They just think he has. So this is a clear illustration here of how this all works. And McClellan can sit there. Okay, fine. The left's going to take care of me now. George Bush fired me and left me out to dry, replaced me with Tony Snow, but the left's going to take care of me. Now, for the rest of my life, I am a credible expert on the Republican Party and the Bush administration. The left will never criticize me anymore. Some people will trade their souls for that. We'll be back. Say, folks, do you think Obama knows that Allen Brothers Steaks is in Chicago? Oh, is that right? His uncle used to work there. Oh, cool. We'll put that in the next commercial.